money for legal fees, ordinary to look into different amendments. So where, I don't know where things would end up, but like I say, that I don't see right today that, you know, that I know I'm benefiting from it. I know I have mass land that I'm a stockholder in, have regional corporation, and they have, you know, stock, but it's in bad financial shape. So if that thing ever went bankrupt, I mean, where would all the stockholders end up at? So when I think we should have looked into this a lot more when the land claim was the way the land claim was settled. I brought it out. I helped work on that land claim when we first started that land claim. And after, I changed my view on it. But then it was too far. The land claim was too far rolling then. And I think what would have been better off for a lot of our people now, what I've seen of it, is that if they would have got even 300 acres as an individual, and then money that the corporation got would be, you know, put out to individual stockholders, and then instead of having massive land claim, I told them that we should go for royalty. And that way, I think we would have been a lot better off than what we got into now. Because right after that, they hit that oil field up there. And we would be getting, as an individual, we would be getting money off that.
Price of oil went up too.
Yeah, so it could have been done different than I think what's been done, but it's just it's already been done, and that's what we have to live with, and try to do best as we know how. Yes. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Charles. Thank you.
Are there any other testifiers? Before we wrap up for the 5 o'clock to 7 o'clock break, let me repeat that. Don't be afraid to speak your peace. This is your forum. You have to make your feelings known. Like I say, even if it may sound awkward, don't feel left out of place. The Alaskan Claim Settlement Act affects every native in the state of Alaska. If you don't say what you feel, you'll never be considered. Your feelings and your thoughts will never be considered. You have to become active in the democratic process just to have your thoughts known. The longer you suppress your feelings and stuff, nothing will be done. Your concerns will never be addressed. You have to come up and speak your piece, even if it's hard, even if you're nervous. During the Tanana Chiefs Conference, there were young, very young Native leaders going up there in front of 500 people. You can see they were shaking like a leaf, but they spoke. But, you know, they go through an initial shock, and then after that, they feel calm. So, during the reconvening at 7 o'clock, if you have anything to say concerning AMSA, feel free to come up here, state your name, and, you know, testify.
Could I just say before we adjourn, that I just want to thank you all for coming, and I want to say that I'm very glad that we're going to meet again tonight at 7 o'clock, but I want to thank those of you who spoke and those of you who attended, because it's really been helpful to me, and I want to thank not only the people from Tanacross, but also the people from Dot Lake, Tetlin, Northway, and Eagle who came as well. It's been a really worthwhile afternoon, and I know the evening will be just as good.
One more. We'll have dinner at 6 here in the hall for the participants and anyone who wants to come, I guess.
Okay, thanks. Pardon? Yeah, okay, Jerry.
Organizations in the local area. He's here just to take the testimony, the testimonies that you may have concerning the claim. Floor is open.
Well, just before you start, could I just say that we who came as visitors today want to thank you for your hospitality. You know, Jim Sykes came with me, who is taping what is said, and his family, Cindy and Christy, came. And you know Mary Kenswick, who works with me, and she's been here before to make the arrangements for the meeting, and her mother, Julie Kenswick from Chicago, was just visiting her, came along too. So on behalf of our whole little party, let me just thank you for a very fine dinner. And if you don't mind, could I thank especially Betty Thomas and Mildred Thomas and all the other ladies that that made the dinner. We sure enjoyed it and appreciated it. So our thanks to you. And I can tell you, all I can do in return is tell you that when we get this transcript done of everything that you people said today, we'll send it back here. We'll send it to Jerry, so you have a transcript of everything that is said, and we'll send it to Dot Lake, Tetlin, Northway, Eagle, and I think I've left one out, but maybe not. And when my report is ready next year, I will send a copy to everybody who spoke today. So in exchange for a very fine dinner, that's my promise to you. So, if anybody else wants to make a presentation, here we are.
lady we visited, her name is Granny?
Jenny Luke.
Mm-hmm. Jenny Luke. Yes, I should say that just before dinner, Mary Kenswick took me to visit Jenny Luke, Granny Jenny, and we had a nice visit with her, and she showed us some of her beadwork, and we appreciated the chance to drop in to say hello to her. So we've only been here a little while, but we've gotten to know the place, I think. So we're waiting for some of you to take a crack at this thing. Any of you that spoke this afternoon that want to add anything, you're welcome to do so.
Well, beings, nobody will break the ice. Get the evening session started.
Good.
My name's Bill Miller, and I had testimony earlier today. But after listening to some of the discussion and some of the testimonies and facts and statements that were given, there was a couple of other ideas that came up. And one's a question that I'm sure is in everybody's mind. It's basically, I cannot understand the idea that Western culture is always has to be right and all other cultures wrong. And this feeling seems to be so strong everywhere the Western culture goes, and it's very evident in ANCSA. The native culture survived through thousands of years through sharing and through their own way, and the Western culture has tried to teach them things such as greed and selfishness. An example of this under ANCSA was where the local corporations, in order to protect what they considered now as their resources, and also out of fear of lawsuit for liability or from the shareholders, they've come up with a permit system on the corporation lands instead of sharing the resources and lands that they've done in the past. basically my own personal feeling of ANCSA was that it was doomed from the start, and that the only reason it was enacted was to prove that the natives could not succeed and would eventually lose the land and the money and become dependent on the state and federal government for funding, whereas they would basically be able to control and dictate to the native populations what they want done. And it would take away the independence. A lot of questions have never been answered. Actually, there are misconceptions by some of the shareholders. You hear the question come up quite often as to where is my title to my piece of land under ANCSA? And it's hard to try and explain to some of the shareholders that they do not own a piece of land under ANCSA. The land belongs to the corporation, and they own a part of the corporation because they're still looking for the title to their piece of land. And until D2 was incorporated, or D2 legislation, they couldn't even get a piece of land from the corporation because the corporation would be giving away their assets. And D2 came up with the brilliant idea of allowing 1.5 acres, which to a person for subsistence is nothing at all. It's just about enough land to build a house or a shack on, and that would be it. And again, the corporations could not give away any more land than that for fear that they'd be sued by their shareholders for giving away the assets, or by the state of Alaska for giving away corporate assets. The smaller corporations, I heard a beautiful idea today, which was to have social programs for some of the seniors and the elderly and other people in the villages. But a lot of the smaller corporations cannot conduct social programs for the seniors or village residents, because if they did, as a profit corporation, they would have to show that this program was producing a profit. And if the program is producing a profit, again, the question rises, is this program an advantage to the seniors and to the, actually a benefit to the people of the community, or are they paying more for the service than they would have otherwise? And again, it comes out, the fear of all the corporations, or a lot of the corporations, is the fear of a lawsuit. They don't know exactly what they can and cannot do, and in order to find out, they have to have legal advice, and legal advice, again, runs into the dollars. I had mentioned in earlier testimony that instead of getting the land free and clear, as they had assumed they were going to get, with so many strings attached to it, that it cost a major portion of the corporation's cash assets to try and settle some of these claims and right-of-ways and easements. And I think a possible solution to this, which would help get the corporation, some of the smaller corporations back on their feet and aid the larger ones, is Congress is the one that did it. And if Congress would turn around and say, well, we messed up by not giving you the land free and clear like we had promised, so what we will do is reimburse you for costs that you had run into in trying to settle these claims so that you could have the land free and clear. And the corporations, through their past audits and through their records, could show the actual expense that they've paid trying to get clear title to the land and be reimbursed by the federal government because it was their foul up to start with.
Earlier today, the subject of allotments came up, Mr. Miller, I think it was Betty Thomas who brought the subject up, and I was asking some questions that I guess sounded like pretty stupid questions, but I wondered if you had any observations about the possibility of restoring the program that made native allotments available from 1906 till 1971.
Well, I had when Betty was talking about it, an idea came across my mind when you asked where the land would come from, state land or federal land. And a possibility, of course, it may not satisfy the demand for allotments in numbers, but a good possibility would be that each of the corporations were required to over-select land, which meant that if for some reason they didn't get the land that they selected, or if they got additional land, or to make up for land that was navigable or withdrawn for some reason, they could get part of this over-selection. And that over-selected land is still protected. If after the settlements are all made, there are still parts of this land over-selected, then there's a possibility that that land could be opened up for native allotments, being it's still held in federal hands, and it was withdrawn as part of the withdrawals for selection. And right now it's going to stay there until they make the final settlements, which may be the year 2000, and which brings up another subject. I've been trying to figure out, 1991 is a magic number to everyone, and they talk about how they're going to set a price on the shares, how there's a possibility of taxing the assets. And honestly, I believe that by 1991, there will still be corporations that have not gotten all of their land. And how can you set a price on a share of a corporation that still has unknown assets, because they don't know what land they're going to get out of what they selected? And also, how can you tax it if it hasn't been IC'd or turned over to them yet? So these are some of the questions. Instead of going, if they're going to have this moratorium period in there, the 20 years should have been 20 years from the time that that particular piece of land is IC'd to the corporation, and not 20 years from 1971. Because, like I say, a lot of corporations still haven't even gotten their land, and they may end up getting it after 1991, and shareholders could turn right around and sell their shares, and the land hasn't been able to prove profitable or non-profitable. There's one other thing, being as nobody's coming up to speak. It's a question that came to my mind, and I haven't heard anyone address it. All the questions and all the statements and everything has been from the view of the individual living within the village that's a shareholder. And a lot of the decisions that are trying to be made, matter of fact, a lot of decisions are being made by these people. But there's a lot of corporations where their shareholders don't live in the village. They either live in Anchorage, Fairbanks, or some of them even live outside in the lower 48. And I wonder what a lot of these shareholders think as to what's going on up here, because they don't have direct contact. And I know I've seen letters come up from shareholders asking, when am I going to get a piece of land? I have the piece of land picked out. When am I going to get title to it? Why haven't you sent me any money? I want to start a business down here. Could you please send me $50,000 to start a business? Because they're sitting down in the lower 48 reading the papers. And just the other day, there was a statement made in the paper that within the next 20 years, the natives are going to be the richest people in Alaska. And I don't know where they get the idea. This was the original Ankh's idea, that people in the lower 48 had the impression that all natives in Alaska were driving around in Cadillacs and all overnight millionaires. And some of these shareholders are sitting down there wondering, what's going on with our corporation? And they must have a very impressive idea of the corporation, because they write back and ask for, you know, think nothing, asking $50,000 so I can start a business down here.
Well, do the shareholders, regardless where they live, receive an annual report?
Most of them get reports if you can keep up with them. Most of them, or a lot of them out there, you can't even keep up with. You get a letter from them at one address, and a week later you can send a letter there, And they're no longer there. They're on the move.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, 2 months later, they send a letter back saying, I haven't heard from you. But all they know is what they read in the paper, and when they read in the paper about millions being lost by the regional corporations or something like this, why? But there's no real reliable source available to them as to what's going on in Alaska. Now somebody else get up here.
Any other testifiers? Your chance to speak.
I hear a pin drop in here.
We can wait a little while and see what happens.
Do you want to take a break, Tom?
Well, I'm going to take a 3-minute break and have a cup of coffee myself, if there is any. It's late till about 10, 11 now, isn't it? Yeah. We slipped an hour in there. Really move it. Yeah, I missed it after. I missed it when I didn't get it, yeah.
My name's Mildred Thomas Jonathan.
I was born and raised in Tana Cross, employed by Tana Chiefs as a health practitioner and a shareholder of Doyon and Tana Cross Corporation. Back in 1971, I filed for a native allotment, was rejected by the state. We'll probably take the land that I have selected. And at this very moment, I feel very uncomfortable using the village corporation land and the other people, native allotment. I feel uncomfortable picking berries. I could not hunt or trap on other people's land because I don't have any land as of this moment. I have 6 acres of land in Tok, which was given to me by my father. He was bought the land and was given to me, but it's located in Tok, where I can't hunt, I can't fish there. It was to my understanding that the land of Tana Cross was supposed to be given to each person, but the Land Claims Act gave the land to Village Corporation. Another thing, there were some assets been given away to some shareholders, which caused some affects to the other shareholders here. I feel very strongly about the children that were not entitled to go on from 1971. Well, we're not entitled to any shares, should stay open, should not be closed at all. Okay, another thing I'd like to say about 1991. When the Doyon and the Tana Cross Corporation turns over their shares to the shareholders, I think if the shareholder is going to sell, I think the corporation should have the first chance or to buy the shares. And another thing I'd like to bring up is the statement that my sister Betty brought up earlier about the Tana Cross airstrip. It was built by my grandparents. Matter of fact, Charlie James, one of the people that made statement today, was one of the people that built that airstrip by hand. I strongly feel that that airstrip belongs to Tana Cross, no matter how I look at it. I don't know how anybody else feels about it, but it brings my grandfather, Joe Joseph, who's one of them, he's dead and gone. But whenever I go up there and see that, and I feel that my grandfather did something, you know, and it should go back to the village instead of some other people using it for their own personal use and making profit out of it. And another thing I feel strongly about is the elderly people. I'd like to see them get some use out of their shares now instead of waiting for 1991. Some of the older people don't have children. Where would their shareholders go? What's going to happen to their shares? So like people like, I'm not an old person, but I strongly feel, you know, that elderly should not wait until 1991. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jonathan. Thank you very much.
My name is Libby Halpin, and I work for the Subsistence Division of the Fish and Wildlife Service, and I just got into Tok yesterday, so I feel a little timid about saying anything because I haven't been here for very long. But I was glad to make it to these meetings so that I could get a feel for what some of the issues are having to do with ANCSA and how the people in this area feel about some of those issues. I'm hoping to be doing a study this summer in 4 villages in this area that the State Subsistence Division, in jointly with the Fish and Wildlife Refuge people, want to do to map this important subsistence use areas in those 4 villages. One thing that's come up, and I seem to have heard it from a lot of different people in different parts of Alaska, that I've done some thinking about, and I thought I'd share that with you. Though when ANCSA was passed, I was pretty young then, I was just getting into high school, I think I have a pretty good feel for why it passed, the reasons it passed, and seems to me there are 2 basic goals, and one of those was that at a time when there was more competition for the land, for the oil up on the North Slope, it seemed like there had to be some kind of a settlement where the native people of Alaska were given the lands that were important to them so that they could continue their subsistence hunting and fishing. So that was one reason, was to protect those important lands to the people. The second was, with a cash settlement and with deeding over these lands, it would give the people a start on getting into the economic system, a start to begin to make profits and to benefit their stockholders. And I think that some people in their testimonies have pointed out the problem that sometimes these 2 different goals, protecting important subsistence lands and the other one, a profit-making corporation to make money for the stockholders, don't always mix. On the one hand, you have a profit-making corporation that's set up to do just that, to make profits to benefit their stockholders. And then on the other hand, you have lands that you've selected because they're really important subsistence lands and are valuable for your hunting and fishing activities. Well, I can see the situation coming up, and I'm sure it's already come up in a lot of areas, where you have some particular parcel of land that might be a very important, well, let's say an example, it might be a very important fishing creek. And someone discovers that there are some important minerals in that creek. And so the profit-making corporation says, well, it looks like we have an opportunity to make a lot of money by mining those minerals in that fish creek. So you could make a lot of money on that project, but at the same time, you might also hurt the fish that are in that creek so that you can no longer depend on that creek for your fishing harvest. So it seems to me that decisions like that probably have come up in the past and will continue to come up in the past. And like Helen David said in her testimony, it's very important to hang on to the land and to take care of it because it's an important part of your subsistence lifestyle. Though at the same time, the corporation will see that potentially mining that stream is also important to make some profit to benefit all the stockholders. So you have two opposing directions to go in, and you have to make a decision very carefully. Jerry Isaac, in his testimony, said that traditional living and a profit-making system, which he called capitalism, don't always mix very well. And I think he's right about that. I'm not sure that they'll never be able to mix, but I know for sure that you'll have to make very careful decisions so that you can ensure that both you can hang on to those important lands for future generations at the same time that you make profits off of certain areas of those selected lands. And you'll have to weigh and balance the benefits so that when a decision like whether or not to mine a fish creek comes up, that you'll think about the money that you could be making off the mining operation, but at the same time, carefully considering the sacrifices that you'll make, giving up that land possibly for a long time for fishing, and how that will affect future generations, to look at the long term then and not just short-term economic benefits. I feel like obliged to say that as a Fish and Wildlife Service person, that just like you have to make responsible decisions for your lands, that so does the federal government and the state government have to make decisions that are responsible and that will continue to protect subsistence for Alaska Natives like they are supposed to. And I think sometimes they need to be reminded of that, and it helps if you let them know what are the important subsistence areas on federal and state lands and remind them how important they are to you and fight decisions that might use those lands to that would be to the disadvantage of people that need them for subsistence. That's all I have to say.
Just a second. Ms. Halpin, the subsistence division of the Alaska Fish and Wildlife Service is responsible for the regulation of subsistence activities on all federal as well as state lands. Is that so?
That's right, yeah.
Under ANILCA, you were given the responsibility for regulating subsistence on federal lands. You didn't have that until then, is that right?
That's right.
And what about on private lands, native, corporate, private lands, and other private lands? How do you handle that?
On private lands, we don't handle that. State lands, the state has to work out subsistence laws that for subsistence uses. And it also is divided up over the species, the species of wildlife that you're talking about. The state has jurisdiction for some species, whereas the federal government has jurisdiction for others.
Federal government has jurisdiction over marine mammals, I believe.
Right now they do, yes. That's sort of in flux right now.
Well, but they haven't surrendered that to the state yet.
No, they have not.
And to what extent, so that you don't have any, you don't assert jurisdiction to regulate subsistence on any private lands, native or non-native. Is that what you're telling me?
I'm not sure. Let me think about it. I'm pretty new in this business, so you've got to bear with me.
The time that the subsistence law was enacted and passed, I didn't see any racial differentiation. The way the law was written, it said, in the event that wildlife resources were scarce, those dependent on those wildlife resources for their living will be the first priority.
Right.
It didn't specify any racial differences.
Right, that's the state subsistence law.
Yeah.
Right.
The one that was upheld in the referendum in November 1982.
That's right.
Well, Chief Isaac or Mr. Miller can help us while we're struggling with this, just to, for my benefit, who regulates subsistence on native corporate land, whether it's village corporate land or regional corporation land?
Right now, the state, under their fish and game laws,
right,
control it just like they do fish and game. It's the same as private property. The only area.
Just the same as private property.
Right, it is private property.
Yes.
And it's just the same as state or private property. They have hunting seasons, they have bag limits, and it pertains to state land, federal land, other possibly a federal reserve sometime. And private property.
So you have a unified system for regulating subsistence on federal land, state land, native corporate land, and any other private land?
The only thing that is in question and hasn't come to a court decision or a lawsuit as such yet is the native allotment, which at times have been referred to as Indian country, and therefore under federal government, and therefore state laws do not pertain. This is one view. The state's view is that their laws pertain regardless of where in the state of Alaska.
Do you agree with Mr. Miller?
Yeah, in certain areas, the subsistence laws in this state are extremely complex, and I feel like I'm just beginning to get a little bit of a hold, but I'm sure everybody's confused by them. They're different by area and by species, and in some areas they have special subsistence use permits, and in another area they may not have that permit system. It's divided up in by areas in game management units, is the way the state administers it, and by species. So it varies greatly from place to place and species to species.
But until Anilka, you had the federal government regulating hunting and fishing and subsistence activities on federal lands, didn't you?
I believe we did, didn't we?
Yeah, correct. Before Anilka was passed, I think the state assumed certain game management, regardless of boundaries, up until Anilka established national interest lands. Then they assumed partial responsibility of fish and wildlife management.
Right.
On federal lands only. Yeah.
Well, like everything else in Alaska, it seems to be complicated. Anything you wanted to add, Ms. Alpin?
The only thing I wanted to add was I forgot in the beginning to say that these are my personal feelings and don't reflect the the subsistence or the Fish and Wildlife Service views on this.
You're not speaking for the governor.
What's that?
You're not speaking for the governor.
No, I'm not speaking for the governor or the president or anyone else, just me.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Anyone else? Any testifiers?
We got one here.
My name is Dolly Jonathan. I'm a resident of Tanacross. And I made out a paragraph here on the behalf of the kids that were born after 1971. The reason why I'm saying this is I have six kids of my own. One is born in December 71, who is recognized in the Act. And the rest of my kids are not recognized as they were born after 1971. My kids don't have the right to vote in the corporation. I'd like to see that they freeze the sale of stock until they settle the matter for the kids being born after 1971, because most of us don't even own native allotment. The kids don't have right to go fishing or hunting on any private land. When my kids inherit my stock and shares, the shares keep getting smaller for splitting it between every one of them. In between all of them, if their kids inherit their shares, it would be getting smaller and smaller, and soon there would be none. I don't know if that's the way it works, but I suppose that's the way it works.
That's the way it works.
See,
some corporations now, they are registering one share, and they're getting below one share out of 100. So what you said, Ms. Jonathan, is exactly what's happening already.
Is there a possibility of them freezing the stock?
Well, if that's what all of you people want, that's what I'll write in my report, and I'll suggest how it should be done, and then I hope that those in office will listen. But I'm really here to see what you want to do about all this before it's too late. And we've got a few years, so it's a good time to review it now.
Well, that's all I've written down. I don't know.
Thank you very much. That's a very important point.
Any other quick fire?
My name is Ted Charles, and I've got a question for you, Judge Berger. You mentioned that the comments you hear at this hearing will be presented to the various groups of people, so to speak. My question is, my understanding of these hearings is that there are a number of Native groups that is putting in for their land claims and stuff, and you're kind of doing a follow-up work as to see how ANCSA did. Yeah. Now, the 1985 study, which is being completed, or is in the draft stages, how does your study compare with that group's work, or do they work together or work side by side, or?
Well, the Department of the Interior, as Mr. Charles has said, is having its own study. It's called the 1985 study, and I think that Jerry Isaac mentioned that it's being done by a firm in Virginia called Management Concepts Incorporated. They are simply assembling statistics, mm-hmm. as I understand it, about the health of Alaska Natives, their education, their housing. They're assembling these statistics from the 1970 census and comparing them to the 1980 census to see how their health and their education and their housing has changed, if it's gotten better, if it's gotten worse, whatever. They're also looking at the corporations to see which ones have made money and which didn't make money and how much money they made and which ones are in debt and so forth and so on. And they're also looking at the roles of shareholders, and they are looking to see how many people have acquired shares in the last 12 years by inheritance. So the point that Ms. Jonathan made about the shares go from one generation to the next, if one couple has 10 children, they leave them all their shares, each child will only have 100, it will only have 10 shares. Another couple has just one child, that child winds up with 200 shares. So I may have got the mathematics wrong, but you know what I mean. It means there will be unequal shareholdings among the shareholders, quite apart from the fact that the... well, anyway, that's the kind of thing they're doing. Now, what we're doing is this. We've been asked by the international organizations of Eskimos and Indians to come up here and come to the villages and the urban centers where Alaska Natives live and say, okay, what do you think about it? And what do you think ought to be done now? We want your opinion. And so that's why I've been here. And the 1985 study, their material is being made public, I think, within a month. So we'll all be able to look at it. And if when you see what they are have written, if you don't like it, you'll be welcome to come to the meetings that I'm holding, because I'm still going to be holding them for the rest of the year. And you can come and say, well, we think the 1985 study is good, or it's bad, or this or that, or they made this is right or this is wrong. Now, when I write my report next year, I hope it will be useful to you. It will be made public. I'll send it to everybody who's testified at these meetings. And then it is for Alaska Natives to decide what use to make of my report. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'll make some suggestions, and you can decide whether to adopt them or not. But my suggestions will be based on what you've told me at these meetings all over Alaska. Finally, the report will be sent to Native Indians and Eskimos in Canada, Greenland, Alaska, Australia, New Zealand, other countries where Native people are engaged in working out their land claims, so that they can see what lessons they can learn from what happened here in Alaska. So the other thing I should say is that after we leave tonight, if there's anything else you want to add, you just send a letter to me in Anchorage at our office there. You can send a statement in writing if you decide you want to add to what you said, or if you wanted to, if there's somebody who's out of town today that wants to send in a statement.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Charles.
Carl Charles from Dot Lake Native Corporation. What I want to bring up is when the answer was passed, by the federal government, that what I like to see is that the federal government give this land claim to Native people with a bunch of loopholes in it that the Native people wasn't aware of. And now, after the land claim was settled, the corporations have to pay out of that money that federal give them to close up some of this loophole. I think that federal government should take second look at this Alaska land claim, and I feel that federal government should close up them loophole by their expense even now, right up to now, and then give it to the Native people. I don't think the Native people got fair shake out of this land claim in count of it, because you have a state that wants easement, or federal government, like BLM, their Department of Interior, they'll come back and say they want easement here, and then the corporation have to spend money on legal fees, trying to close up different loopholes. And I think federal government should take second look at that land claim. And I think with federal expense, I think they should close up them loopholes and then turn this land over to the Indian people. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Charles.
Do you know this fire?